All right. Well, we've got this guest sitting here, Ellen.
So we do.
Hi,
welcome,
Carrie.
Say
hi,
Bradley.
Carrie. Say hi into the microphone.
Hi, Ellen. Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Carrie.
Thank you so much for having me, and hello, listeners.
Our pleasure.
And Carrie happens to be here. We have this connection with Carrie.
Yes.
Through her father, because Peter Bradley, some people in Hudson and environs may know Peter, ran the program at the New York State Council on the Arts. It was literature and media of any kind, I guess.
Yes, if I think of the
film and
T-shirt
video
that we all wore for many, many years.
Yes.
Literature, television.
Film, TV, lit, I think we used to call it.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
That sounds right, yeah.
Although called
I feel
it
like
what?
He was a
film, TV, lit.
Oh, lit,
I feel
lit.
Like there was a possible dance element, but that was the department.
Sure, why not?
I remember when we were talking earlier about the video freaks, but when the notion of working in video came up, several artists almost stormed the gates.
Uh-oh.
Because we were told, well, this is the film department. We don't understand what this video business is, and we're not going to be funding video. Well, there was enough demand that they felt maybe they'd better look into it. And so video was added.
Yeah, and I can imagine the storm of controversy at the time, you know, when a whole new art form hit. You know, I mean, I was making records at the moment when everybody was switching from analog to digital.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it was a similar hot debate and, you know, and a confusing one, you know, in terms mm-hmm. of if you think of film as analog and video as digital, it's a similar kind of aesthetic question, and, you know, how exciting that, you know, it continues to be, you know, a really innovative art form alongside film.
Well, the video freaks were famous for being in, I mean, they were primarily in the Woodstock area. I guess that's where the organization was formed. And last year or 2 years ago at the Columbia Film Club's festival, what is it called?
The Chatham Film Club, right?
Chatham Film
That puts
Club.
On the Columbia Film Festival, something like that.
I guess.
Yeah. Film Columbia.
Yay.
Yeah. Everything has to be one word that's really two words. Yeah.
Anyway, the film about the video freaks with lots of footage in it of, you know, the groups.
Yeah, it was terrific.
Groups
yeah.
standing outside their van. Remember that big van
mm-hmm.
they had?
I do.
And
when was that released? It was,
I would say, about 2 years ago
okay.
this fall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I need to track it down.
And I
yeah,
think it's
track
called
it down.
Here Come the Video Freaks, something
yeah.
like that.
And it's a documentary history of their getting started.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Perry Teasdale is very much a part of it.
Great.
Yes, who is
great.
Now the editor of the Columbia paper, which is two words. Columbia paper.
It's an old-fashioned space.
Right, he's a real old-fashioned kind of guy. But, you know, Carrie, you mentioned records, et cetera. Actually, we're here with Carrie Bradley Nevis
mm-hmm.
today. And tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, right now, I think you're on the board of Writers in the Mountains, but also and primarily or at first heart, you're a musician. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
And it's not to make it too long a story. Now you're going to get me going, Debbie. But do you know Galen Williams?
Sure. Of course.
Okay. So
we both know her.
Whenever I think about this question of the sort of parallel paths that my life has taken since I was a teenager, really, you know, when I was at college, I was absolutely positive that I was going to be a writer and that the, uh-huh. you know, the literary realm was going to be my home for life. And then, but we'd always played music in our house, you know, I mean, listened to a lot of music, but also played music.
Uh-huh.
And
oh, that's
so
nice.
That, you know, followed me around as well. I started playing violin when I was 8, and then gradually during my college years, through one accident, happy accident, and another, ventured into you know, out of classical and into country, bluegrass, folk, singer songwriter, what we now call singer songwriter,
right? Yes,
That was very exciting.
One word, hyphenated.
Yes, it's hyphenated, singer songwriter.
How many times have I asked myself that? But anyway, I just remember my senior year and sitting with Galen, who had come to town.
And tell us
to
who
visit.
Galen is.
She worked for the Poets and Writers Magazine.
Right, she founded Poets and Writers Incorporated, which eventually published Poets and Writers Magazine, yes.
Exactly.
Which was edited by...
me, Debbie.
Debbie Mayer.
Yeah. What? Debbie?
Yeah, the original.
You're right. 2 degrees of separation.
Really?
As you began with. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Well, I have many questions for you after the show.
Okay.
But I remember sitting with her over a sandwich, you know, and saying... Music or writing. I don't know where to focus now that all these things have happened musically, right? When I thought my life was going to be simply beating my head against the wall.
Right.
Trying to be a
which humiliating endeavor shall I go for?
Exactly. So, and I remember her looking at me and saying, and she said, she looked me deeply in the eyes and said, which is funner?
Oh, good for her.
Yeah.
So it... you know, that question has kind of defined my life in certain ways, in a sort of submarine way for ever since. And I still do both. And they're still both equally important.
There's room for both.
Yes, yeah. Actually. Yeah. And I'm very happy to be working with Writers in the Mountains, because for a long time, you know what happened? I went to graduate writing school and in the process of finishing my master's and, you know, continuing to sort of make plans as a writer, I played more and more music.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're in the late 80s and the indie rock and singer-songwriter movement is bubbling up, and a whole different style of writing is happening in what's essentially pop music. You know, so me and my friends at graduate writing school started writing songs the same way we wrote stories. That
really?
Is with, you know, a different kind of shape, not just verse, chorus, more storytelling.
Story songs.
A different vocabulary than you usually expect to find in a folk song. Some black comedy, a high level of metaphor, vivid imagery. You know, we were just and also distracting ourselves or procrastinating, you know, because in fact music did seem funner. You know, an easy rhyme, a laugh, a line that maybe wouldn't work on its own in a short story on the page, but could wring tears.
Right.
Because you have the right minor chord. You know, we were just sort of experimenting with all those kind of the different powers of those forms. And so, anyway, that was a long time ago, but here I am still. But I play the violin as well, and ended up playing with lots of bands, doing lots of touring, exploring my own kind of songwriting evolution. And the next thing you know, I felt like I hadn't written a lot or spent a lot of time in the writing community where a lot, you know, some of my graduate school friends and writer friends were immersed in a way which I, you know, craved myself. So when I ended up joining the board of the Writers in the Mountains, it was a great opportunity for me to get back to the literary community and do some more prose writing. And so it feels like a really great kind of moment for me to get the two back in balance.
Excellent.
It's been terrific.
When was Writers in the Mountains founded?
It was founded in 1992. And
really?
I'm glad you asked, because that means this is the year of our 25th anniversary.
All right, then.
And
yeah.
We have...
it's been around for a while.
Yes, we have some events... that are built around celebrating that, and it's
good.
Very exciting.
Yeah,
yes, it started in it was very focused in the Catskills at that point. Founded in Roxbury, Margaretville, and Andes, where most of the classes took place. Up in Delaware County, and I think it started as a journal writing class with eight members. Really? And it just has grown from there over, you know, these last 2.5 decades to we now have over 500 students.
Wow.
In the course of a year.
Wow.
And
indeed,
a lot of other people who are aware and come to events. We have a terrific staff of teachers who are poets and writers and playwrights and artists and illustrators, and they're university professors, retired university professors. We have Sari Botten is the editorial director for the TMI project in Kingston. I don't know if you know of it. It's a storytelling and more organization. We have a new teacher is Lisa Kiernan. She's the founding director of a thing called the Poetry Barn, which is a really neat little new writing center in West Shokan, I think.
Yeah.
We have Leslie Sharp, who taught at Columbia forever and is the author of one of the book editing Bibles of contemporary times. Oh. And we have Amy Brockway, who's the artistic director at Open Eye Theater in Margaretville.
My goodness, there's so much.
It goes on and on, yeah. So we have
so many organizations being formed.
I know, this region is really, it's very exciting.
Yeah.
You know, the more you
I look at your website, and you have a lot of great things going on. It makes you, you know, want to try your hand at being a writer.
Well, you know, that's really
I've tried
our goal.
That and failed, so it's, I can move on.
The whole goal of the vision of the program is to create classes that invite everyone, that are inclusive, that are for beginners and intermediates and published authors. We have a creative nonfiction class taught by Anique Taylor, one of our most popular teachers who teaches year-round. She actually teaches three sections of this class throughout the year.
Huh.
And it's a wonderful class for from beginners to seasoned veterans, where it's about, you know, just opening a door to self-expression in a medium that is, you know, intimidating still for a lot of people, or we all of us need ongoing, you know, support and feedback. And and meanwhile, we have every year we do a one-day literary festival. It's a wonderful event. It's been in at the Union Grove Distillery in Arkville for the last 2 years, which we like the metaphor of, you know, they're making spirits from local apples and wheat and, you know, things like that. And so we like the idea of holding it there, where they're very great, wonderful sponsors and collaborators. And, you know, the metaphor of distilling spirits and also distilling.
Don't try swinging a cat in Columbia County or Greene County, or you'll hit a writer.
Yes.
It's true.
They're all over the place.
It's true, yes. And, yeah, we've had just a really great experience kind of trying new events and trying to attract new people. And
I think wonderful. I also read that you're... Are you working on an opera? Lyrics? The libretto, perhaps?
I've been working on a musical.
Oh, a musical.
For a number of years. And to this day, and for many of us, just consists of a pile of notes and an adjacent pile of songs. And...
You're trying to put them together.
I am. Yes, I guess. Yes, it's matches my own sort of.
I can't help but say that I seem to recall once asking your father how are the girls doing, you and your sister, and he told me you were in a band in a way that made me think that maybe he thought you were going to rack and ruin because. It was not a profession, certainly for a girl. But you know.
Yes.
It was gonna be drugs and rock and roll or something. You
know? Right, exactly, yes, and down the rabbit hole of I have to say, I'm sure they were somewhat concerned, you know, by the time I'd done my two higher education degrees in English, and I thought that I would, you know, probably teach and write and
Sure.
And stroll, you know, ivy-lined paths with patches on my tweed. But and so they were, I think they were a little probably concerned that, you know, when, you know, rock and roll is different from classical. And it's it was many, 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 many miles and hours and days on the road.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's definitely in certain ways, it's that lifestyle that is legendary. And, you know, it's living out of a suitcase and it's a lot of people and it's a lot of pressure, you know, and a lot of, anyway, I will also say that they were always so supportive.
Well,
if they were worried, they didn't tell me, and they came to shows and they rocked with the best of them and they were very proud.
That's
and,
good.
You know, I had a lot of great opportunities to travel the world and meet all kinds of amazing artists. And
I think the fact that you played the violin redeemed you somewhat.
Probably so. Probably so. Right. Had I switched to the drums,
it would have been all over.
That would have been
trouble. We're talking to Carrie Bradley this afternoon on WGXC Acra 90.7. And she's a musician and a writer. So we're talking about her career in a band and her writing. And actually, Ellen, speaking of all the good art shows that are available, I want to run one new underwriter, okay?
Sure.
Hang on, everybody.
Okay.
Yeah.
Debbie the engineer.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by John Davis Gallery, located at 362 Warren Street in Hudson, presenting the paintings of Michael David and the work of five other artists. Opening reception is from 6 to 8 p.m. Saturday, August 19th. Work will be on display through September 10th. Information at 518-828-5907.
Thank you. So, yeah, there's a new opening on Saturday. There are a few openings in Hudson, I think, this Saturday.
Yes, there are, yep.
And one is at the John Davis Gallery.
So he has an opening every month. I mean, he has a new show every month.
He does, and he has this amazing setup. He has a gallery, and then he has a carriage house in back of the building where he also displays, as they said, he has at least five artists this time, maybe six. And so there are three flights in the carriage house, at least. And then in between, there's a garden kind of setup where there's sculpture and things like that.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I suspect I've been, having been up and down
probably
Warren Street.
Yes.
But we always enjoy it. I live about 90 minutes away, so we don't have...
Oh, the other thing I loved that I read about you is that you are a copy editor, mostly for cookbooks.
Yes.
Really?
That's my day job.
Isn't that...
really?
How did you get into that? Do you have to sample the offerings, the recipes?
Well, as copy editor, I don't get to be in the tasting or testing phases, alas. But I will say that, you know, I have learned a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Found a lot of very, you know, tantalizing recipes that are in my arsenal to this day. And
excellent.
Also do actually, one of the jobs of a cookbook copy editor is to, and it's something you can kick back to the author, but I am a cook and I like being in the kitchen. So sometimes I test little steps, you know.
Well, that's good.
I was going to ask you that.
You know,
as the copy editor, is it up to you to say, oh, wait, not two cups, one cup?
Well, that part is part of testing, but
right.
if it
should have
really
been checked.
Simple, you know, and especially with the sort of international cookbook community, a lot of the books I do are translated into metrics. And, and so occasionally I'll just get out there and chop it up and weigh it and then cook it, you know, or even something as simple. These are the kind of things that become second nature over the years, but the big... one of the big style differences in cookbooks is that some houses prefer point of purchase form and other houses prefer prepared form. So to put it simply,
Put it simply.
Some ingredients lists will say one clove of garlic minced, Mm-hmm. And another book will say 1 teaspoon of minced garlic.
Oh my gosh.
Because of the wonderful consistency of nature, more or less, one medium clove of garlic minces out to about a teaspoon. You know, it reliably enough that you can do it that way. You know, and of course, people who do that recipe once and love garlic might do, you know, 5 cloves of garlic next time. But that works for a kind of the boilerplate. So those are the kind of things that I will sometimes just get up and figure out. And, you know, or cooking times. Anyway. It's like, really fun, especially in this era. I mean, I started as a cookbook editor in 1994. So what I, you know, what I've seen blossom, if you will, is, you know, this amazing era of farmers markets, focusing on local and seasonal, and that kind of thing. So it's been a kind of exciting time to,
I'll bet,
be in the cooking world for that.
Wonderful.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I was going to ask you what changes you had seen, but you're saying farmers markets, and I mean, have the recipes changed? Or what people cook, or what the cookbooks emphasize, the kind of cookbook?
I would say so. I mean, other than, you know, this sort of expected transition from, you know, what we did in the 50s with the convenience food, you know, the advent of convenience foods, you're moving back towards, but it's just as it gets more and more, as we've come more and more back to an emphasis on good, pure, you know, ingredients, fresh, the tone of the recipes has also changed. And in a way, it amazes me that people still buy cookbooks because of, you know, food television and blogs. And, you know, it really astonishes me every day with all the wonderful food bloggers out there and all the stuff on, not just the Food Network, but, you know, fantastic things like Chef's Table and, you know, all the cooking competition shows. There's so many places to, you know, to get your recipes. But people still like books. They like pictures. They like to sit down in the morning with their Cooks Illustrated. And I think maybe one thing that's, you know, across those written forms is that the tone has taken on some of the more personality-driven and informal language. I mean, there's still a lot of cookbooks that stick to simple and formal, but there is a lot more, you know, sort of personality and accessibility in the voice of the books, which is fun as well.
Have you ever tried any of these, not prepared meals, but they send you all the ingredients?
I haven't. I have heard the commercials a million times, though, because I listen to NPR and podcasts.
They're on
Blue Ribbon, or not Blue, Blue something.
Advertisements for, I get the New York Times in the morning and online, and there's always an advertisement for one of these, you know.
Yeah. I think
all
those have been a great boom.
You a box, and you have to cook
I mean,
it.
You'd think with all the farmers markets or Whole Foods and Whole Foods style supermarkets that, you know, it's been easier to, you know, organize a bag full of ingredients that will cook up in it to a simple but, you know, healthy, beautiful meal. But I think people are busy, you know. I mean,
I guess so.
You know, a lot of people who are raising kids, they have, you know, both parents have jobs, or so I think that they are probably a great boon to busy families where, you know, we're lucky enough to live in, you know, farmland
and maybe it
have our own garden and flexible schedules, but I could see that being really useful in this
maybe
city.
It teaches people how to cook in a way, or gets them started.
Absolutely, yeah.
They don't
like to
cook. They don't know how to cook. So
but that way they're not just getting takeout.
Walks them through it.
They're putting something in a pan and learning what an onion looks like once it's been softened. And it's true. It probably does introduce a lot of people to
Oh, that reminds me. I meant to soften an onion before I came over here. Oh, well.
Why were you going to soften an onion?
To make a salad.
Oh. Oh. Well.
The tuna and cannellini bean and red onion salad.
Oh, and the red onion was going to sit in some vinegar while you were here.
Yeah. Now I'm going to be hungry.
Me too.
Well, it happens. Last week we had Ed Tsoukas on to... He's a vegan, and he's, you know, we learned a lot, and it was really interesting.
Mm-hmm. And he talked about a plant-based diet. Yes.
Yeah. Yes, I have a couple of friends who are vegans.
Yes.
And have
do you like to talk
them
to them?
I do. I do. I like, you know, it's, yeah, I do. Because I'm been around a lot of vegetarianism, but mm-hmm. I'm also a cheese lover, and like mm-hmm. taking out eggs and cheese.
I know. That's what kind of stopped
and
me.
And cream and things like that. Yeah. You know, that's a whole different set of challenges for,
it is.
You know, creating a really flavorful, you know, and texturally interesting
mm-hmm.
dish. But of course, there are so many very, very gifted vegan cooks around. It's hardly mm-hmm. hardly problem, not a problem, but you know, it's
yeah, Ed
it's
is
a whole
another
wonderful world unto itself.
Cook. Yeah,
yeah,
he's good at it.
So, what? How do you manage to still be involved in with music and do all these other things as well, like edit cookbooks in your spare time?
Well, it's.
I mean, do you perform?
Always easy, but
in public?
I do. Yes, so there's several avenues where I still get to, you know, express myself musically. One is that again, this region is so full of amazing mm-hmm. people, artists, musicians. So I have a few friends I play with.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a, well, I shouldn't have so many things here to plug. I won't even begin, but there's a band called Two Dark Birds that I play with. They're based in sort of Mount Tremper, Woodstock. So mm-hmm. We're playing a show on September 2nd at the Emerson in conjunction with a screening of a really cool sounding film, which I've forgotten the name of. There's a singer-songwriter based in Pine Hill called Josh Roy Brown,
mm-hmm.
who I play with sometimes, mm-hmm. and I'll play in my town. For my own work, which is now weirdly stripped down to just myself, after 25 years of playing in a bazillion bands, I have, for my own writing, I have just two projects left, and one is a duo.
Mm-hmm.
A bi-coastal duo with a songwriting friend in California.
Huh.
Actually, I'm sorry. He just moved to St. Paul.
Oh, my gosh.
So he's closer.
Closer.
Yes.
Yes. We have a record coming out of a set of songs we've been working on for years. And that band is called The Great Auk. We have mm-hmm. a little Facebook page, and the record should be out hopefully this fall.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just do my solo thing, for which I've had to get clever but hopefully not gimmicky, using the violin through effects pedals so that I can play the violin and still sing lyrics, which
uh-huh.
is, you know, for people like Alison Krauss with the backup band,
yeah,
she makes it look easy. For me, it's pretty tricky. So that's been actually kind of a revelation and really fun challenge. So I'm enjoying that.
Sounds
and I've mainly been playing in the city with that set, but
uh-huh.
I aspire to playing more around home and, you know, places like Hudson.
Helsinki, perhaps.
Perhaps. Mm-hmm. Something like that. Yeah, it's very sparse. It's very lyric driven. So it's not right for every place, but
mm-hmm.
I think there are a bunch of venues, you know, in our bailiwick that I should check out, because mm-hmm. it keeps me writing, and it keeps my violin in my hands, you know. So so many people I meet, even now at my age, say, oh, I played the violin when, you know,
right,
at high school, mm-hmm. maybe through college, you know, and so many of them put it down. I was lucky, really,
uh-huh.
that I got drawn into rock and roll, because I was not going to be a symphony player, and so you know, therefore my violin is still a very active part of my life. So,
and
but
do you think
it's balance, you know, it's hard to, you know, find all the rehearsal time and the booking time and the promotion time at the same time you have day job and, you know, a life and friends.
And do you think of it as a violin, not as a fiddle?
I, definitely think of it as both.
Uh-huh. Yes. Okay.
In the ongoing dualities and
Did
ambiguities that I deal in.
Oh, you brought
I didn't bring the violin today. I thought it'd be simpler just to, if we have time, maybe play one song on guitar on my way out.
That would be fun.
But I play, I've played a lot of fiddle with country bands and bluegrass bands, and I love that. And it's really, the instrument itself is no different, but the style is, of course.
Yes.
So when I'm heading off with my gnome to country as Wanda Taters, I certainly am grabbing up my fiddle.
But you're Wanda Taters?
I am Wanda Taters.
That's
in a
great.
Fabulous part-time band in San Francisco called The Book. It's but otherwise I do call it my violin.
So this is Carrie Bradley, a.k.a. Wanda Taters, that we're talking to today on WGXC Acra 90.7 on your radio dial, or streaming live 24/7 from WGXC.org. So...
So do
What's
you have
next?
Family? Are they all listening in at this moment?
Well, you know, I wasn't sure it was streaming live, but I think my husband's probably listening, and probably my dad.
Probably.
And
hi,
my
Peter.
Mom, if she's home. I should have told my sister. That's terrible. Maybe he told
well,
her.
Well, they generally archive the show. And
okay,
yeah.
Good.
We'll can
make sure
give it to them. Yes.
Well, thank you again for having me. This is such a treat. What a fabulous
this is fun.
Station. I love efforts like this. It's really, really special to be a part of it.
We're only, what, 6 years old,
oh,
Debbie?
Yeah,
sounds about right, Ellen.
Well, you know, that's, I mentioned earlier WIOX, the community-run radio station in Roxbury.
Uh-huh.
And I think they're probably about the same age.
Uh-huh. Hmm.
Which, you know, is, I mean, again, with, you know, with internet radio and all, it's so really thrilling to see community radios.
Exactly.
Seems to be,
a radio
know,
station.
Having kind of a resurgence.
Yeah.
And as you well know, it's a lot of work, and it's just, it's so great to, I looked at your programming, it's amazing, and WOX is, I think they're on 24 hours a day. I don't know, I can't remember their schedule, so it's really a great...
That's great.
They are. ...resource and addition to...
Hmm.
So what else can you tell us about? Is there anything lingering in your mind? That
well, no, I would just encourage people who are out there, you know, and have had an urge to write but haven't found a writing center near them or are looking for a community, that Writers in the Mountains is just a really... accessible and unpretentious and terrific program with great teachers, like I said. And we teach fiction and poetry and creative nonfiction, memoir, nature writing, illustration, occasionally business writing class. We're hoping to get one on the schedule this year still. And
how
and
far is that
in,
from
so
Catskill?
For everyone. An hour and a half. Well, the
from
class
Catskill?
Is actually... The class, I would look at the website. The classes are spread out depending on where the teacher is.
Okay.
So for someone in Catskill, you know, class in Woodstock might not make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have classes, in, you know, further north or, you know, like in Andes or Roxbury. We work in libraries and community centers.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
You know, we have great support from the local libraries and bookstores and... community centers and places like that. So, you know, if you're willing, if some people drive from Albany down to New Paltz to take a class. So it depends on what you're looking for, but it's definitely worth checking out the website.
Are you familiar with the Spotty Dog here?
I am.
Because there's a great reading series there called Volume.
Okay.
And
it's
once a month. I think it's the first... Saturday of the month.
Now that or I've, the second. I think
yeah,
it's the
exactly.
Second.
The minute I said first, I thought, I think it's the third, so maybe the second is right.
That's such a
we'll
great
compromise.
Store. We're big. My husband and I are big fans.
Yeah, it's fun, isn't it?
It is fun.
Yeah. But it's a series. It is not programmed by, I mean, it's not produced by Spotty Dog, but by these two other women who... organize it.
Okay.
But it's really nice. And I always think, how, and they have music there too, and I think, how can they do it? There's no room.
Uh-huh.
But
I know, it's a small space.
All those big bookcases are on wheels. They just push them back.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good trick. I didn't
yeah.
know that. That's great. I'll watch their calendar.
So we maybe you could perform there.
We have a couple friends who were involved there, who worked there.
You could play a little, write a little. No, read a little.
Yeah.
Play a little,
yes,
read a little.
Something like, yeah. Do you know Amy Rigby, local musician?
I don't know her personally, but
yeah,
I certainly know her.
Yeah,
her
she,
reputation is
yeah,
out there.
She and her husband do house concerts in the area and are both great songwriters. I've always thought it'd be fun to do a show with her or them or maybe a little spotty dog.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, tell us again the website for Writers in the
It's writersinthemountains.org.
That's easy enough.
Easy enough, yes. We have, and again, it's a little far for perhaps your listenership, but if you're heading, you know, east down to Kingston or the city, I don't know if you guys are aware of the Catskill Interpretive Center in Mount Tremper. It's a
oh,
new
in
facility
Mount Tremper.
On the scenic byway. It's, I believe, an offshoot of the Catskill Center in Arkville. And they do a lot of events there, and it's meant to be, the Interpretive Center is meant to be kind of a way for visitors to understand the Catskill Park and the mountains and, mm-hmm. and the region in a bunch of ways through, they do, you know, just there's still a bunch of fun things in the center, and they do some events. So we did a neat series this year called Mutual Muses in the Catskills, where it was
mm-hmm.
Talks between a visual artist and a writer. And there were three. We're down to the last one, but it's on September 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the website, of course, and that's at the Catskill Interpretive Center, which is really worth checking out if you're, you know, if you are going in and out from that end. And mm-hmm. they have a beautiful little hikes across the road, and so that's neat. And then
oh, you told me about something you did at Olana. This reminds me of that.
Oh, that was fun. Yes, there's also a great series, and that's ongoing through October, I think, called Artists on Art.
Oh, yes, right. I remember you were part of that.
I was,
and you're coming back, are you not?
Yeah, I am. On Friday, October 6th, I'll be doing another house tour at Olana.
Okay.
Right.
I have to write that down.
With my interpretation of the house, and I played, wrote some... sort of half wrote, half adapted some music to play there. The director of education, Amy Huffnagel, who founded mm-hmm. the series, said that she had never heard music played in the house before until I
How
took out my violin.
You were
and of
the
course,
one who did it. All right.
And that was thrilling for me to hear. And she said, thrilling
yes.
for her. Because, of course, he was Frederick Church was a big fan of music and
yes,
had
I'm
many
sure
salons
he was.
And visiting composers from around the world. And so that was fun. So I will be doing that again on October 6th, and there are six other artists from different mediums, filmmakers, visual artists, who are doing other tours in that series. I think it's every Friday night.
Uh-huh.
It ends with a glass of wine at sunset on the piazza,
uh-huh.
which is just one of the most stunning
Sounds
views
lovely.
Of the river. And the
yes.
imaginable. And so, yeah, I recommend that. And then... by way of connection, Amy's husband is a guy called Chris Funkhauser, who's one of my old cohort from the Bay Area music scene.
Mm.
And he is a beautiful poet and professor at the New Jersey Institute of Technology. But he is curating this year the Subterranean Poetry Festival. Have you heard of it?
No.
That's in Rosendale, where
the old
lime mines are. And there is one of those mines has been built out into a performance space. So there's a poetry reading that literally happens
in the mine.
In the mine.
Oh, wow.
And I'll be taking part in that as well. And it sounds really cool. That's
it
on
does.
September 10th.
Uh-huh.
And Rosendale, of course, is a charming little town.
Yes.
It's like a mini Hudson.
It is, isn't it?
So
I hear about it.
It used to have quite a reputation as a, you know, wild place.
Did it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a
like
house
Summer of Love Wild, there. Hippie Wild, or what kind of?
I guess Hippie like, Wild, yeah. Probably.
Mm-hmm.
But it somehow cleaned up its act. It's like Hudson goes through phases. We've had our day of, you know,
wildness.
Yes, of wildness. Yeah. It's wildness, true. Yeah.
Yeah, Thomas E. Dewey had to clean it up.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't know who he is, I don't think. The minute I said it, I thought. He was the governor at one time. But, well.
All right.
Should we have some music?
Yeah, we should, because soon we'll have to have the news. So please, play us some music, Carrie.
Is the news at 5?
Yes, it is.
I think I can pull that off.
I bet you can.
Great. Really,
we're talking to Carrie Bradley, and she's going to play a little guitar and sing, because she's a musician. That's why.
Well, I'll sing one song. I think it's about 4 minutes long. So
okay.
I'll say goodbye now, and thank you again.
Oh, okay.
So nice to meet both
Thanks.
Of you.
Thank
and,
you.
What a treat.
And if you're ever performing in Hudson, please let us know.
Yes, do.
Absolutely, I will.
Yes.
In fact, I will conscript you to my email list before I leave.
Okay.
That's fine with me. Yeah, do.
Let me grab it.
All right. It's live radio, folks, and Carrie Bradley is picking up her guitar, which is at the ready. Now she's seated again, and she's going to sing and play.
I'll play, this song's called Paradox, and it shows it because it's the title track to that great Auk record that should be out soon.
Super.
Let's say by Christmas.
Okay.
And, you can find the Great Auk on Facebook and it's
the Great Hawk. Yeah, did
the
you
great
say
Auk? A-U-K, like
A-U-K.
The flightless bird. Which,
all right, the Great
again,
Auk. So I'm going to look for that on Facebook.
The flightless bird being a paradox that runs to the heart of the kind of things I like to think about. And this is the title track. The record's called Paradox, and the song's called Paradox. Let's see if I can. I'm not sure you'll get my guitar from this height, but I think you probably will.
Oh, you can use this mic too, perhaps. Would that help?
Can you hear that, Debbie?
I can hear you through the earphones.
The That's fine.
Okay, I think it's fine. It's a quiet song. Start with the whistle. See if I have enough spit.
Okay.
When you hold my hand, it feels like toes in the sand. If you'll forgive me for standing on sentiment, our regimens disclose, you unfold me like a rose, or any other name for this florid emotion. How do you make me feel safe and free at the same time with that same nose and those same hips, those same hands, and those same lips? How can this pair of thoughts exist at the same time? When you hold my head, things upturn to good from bad. You release me from wallowing in sediment. By the way, your brain is gray. Yeah, your spirit takes my breath away like a rocket ship beneath the ocean.
that same nose and those same hips, those same hands and those same lips. How can this pair of thoughts exist at the same time? The closer you get, stronger I feel. It seems the only thing that's weak is my knees. Please tell me why it's finally easy to sleep, why I don't want to sleep most of the time. With that same nose and those same eyes and those same lips around that same smile, how can this pair of thoughts exist at the same time?
Yes, beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
That was lovely.
Thank you
that,
so much.
That was Carrie Bradley singing and playing her song Paradox, correct? Okay. Which is on her upcoming album, also called Paradox, correct? Okay.